This is Fresh Air. Melvin Van Peebles was one of the first black feature filmmakers. He wrote, directed, scored, produced, and starred in the 1971 action film Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. It remains one of the highest-grossing independent features of all time. Although the film's success helped open the door to Hollywood for other black filmmakers, Van Peebles never quite walked through that door himself. He directed only one Hollywood movie, the 1969 Watermelon Man. After Sweetback, Van Peebles left filmmaking, produced two Broadway shows, wrote for television, worked as a Wall Street trader, and wrote a book about stock options. In January, Robert Redford's Sundance Institute had a tribute to Melvin Van Peebles. And last month, the Museum of Modern Art in New York showed a retrospective of his work, including his new film, Identity Crisis. Van Peebles directed and produced Identity Crisis. His son Mario wrote the screenplay and stars in the film. It was Mario that helped get his father back into movies.
Really, Mario kept urging me, come on, Dad, I really would like us to do something together again, because he had worked with me on some of my Broadway shows. He had been an actor in some of them, and he'd always worked around me from, you know, from earliest childhood. In fact, he was in the infamous opening scene of Sweetback.
Yes, well, since you brought that up, I'll ask you about that scene. Sweetback, the movie opens with a 10-year-old Sweetback finding a home for himself in a whorehouse and having his sexual initiation with a 40-year-old woman. And it's a fairly explicitly done scene. They're both nude. He's in between her legs. And this is your son in that role, your 10-year-old son. I was astonished when I found out it was your son. What made you decide to cast him in that part?
Well, one, he tends to look like me, being my
right.
son and all.
Yeah.
And what I always found very interesting was people saying, but it's your son. But every child is someone's son, and I wouldn't ask my son or myself to do anything that I wouldn't ask of anyone else's child. I don't have that differentiation of, well, it's mine, and therefore it cannot be.
Let me just ask you, how much did your son know about sex when that scene was shot? I mean, did he get what was happening?
Well, let me put it this way. He wanted a bicycle for Christmas, so he didn't have a lot of leverage. And I didn't ask him, actually. Well, he did say something rather funny, though. He said, Dad, is this going to be an X movie? I said, yes. He said, phew. Oh, I don't want the kids at school to see me.
Uh-huh. Your film, Sweetback, was considered to be the first of the blaxploitation films. What you did was you took the action genre and put it into a black politicized context. And I'd really be interested in hearing what gave you the idea to do that.
Well, being alive really gave me the idea of doing it. I just got the reason, my original reason for going into films was that I had gotten tired of seeing blacks portrayed in an image that I didn't agree with. And so I said, gee, I can do better than that. And that had been, 15 years earlier when I had made that decision. I didn't mean technically. That hadn't interested me. It was simply the content. And if you don't control your images, then you don't have a base for controlling your destiny. So I wanted to control how I was perceived, and therefore I went into films. Now, you said something very interesting when you said that the film was the first blaxploitation film. It was not really the blaxploitation film. It started blaxploitation, which took out the political content and just kept the action and the winning black person. In fact, the revolutionary aspect of Sweetback was put at a 180-degree turn and became almost an apology for the man. For example, what I mean by that is Sweetback had a political education. This person who was essentially apolitical, as he was running from a situation that he always had avoided, he discovered that all of the lines in the community were controlled by a larger power structure, and that power structure was coming down on him like a ton of bricks. And therefore, what he had avoided, that knowledge that he had avoided, he was confronted with. And rather than acquiesce to that situation, he charged forward. The movies that came afterwards, because up until that time, there had really been no black movies that mirrored the ethos, the wants and the desires of the lumpen proletariat, the urban proletariat. And that's what Sweetback did. However, what they did afterwards is they took someone like the detectives, who, if you really analyze it very carefully, was always under the thumb of an urban buona. That is, Shaft had the commissioner to report to, even though he was permitted to be slightly freelance, slightly freewheeling, which was the sop that was thrown to the black audience. The Cleopatra Jones series. There, again, you had someone who was working for the government as an undercover agent. In each case, these people became an apology for the system.
You're talking about wanting to make movies that had an image that you believed in. Now, Sweetback was praised by a lot of people for being a black film, you know, made by blacks, starring blacks, set in the black community. On the other hand, it was criticized by many people within the black community for having its hero be the real stud. And some people saw that as perpetuating a stereotype instead of shattering it. And I wonder what you thought of those criticisms and what you think of them now in retrospect.
Well, I thought that Jesus Christ was nothing but a carpenter in his own hometown, and so it really didn't bother me too much. I think that's completely valid, what they said, and I disagree with it 100%. That is, you can take a stereotype and you don't have to run from it. You can take it to the other side and throw it back a la jiu-jitsu, and use that stereotype as the impetus for your force. You see, I could have taken Sweetback and had him a college professor, but that was not the situation of the people that I wanted to talk to, the large group of people that I wanted to talk to. I took Sweetback from, let's say, one of the lowest possible common denominators in the community and therefore moved him forward. I didn't move him forward from some elevated period or position in the community from the first place, whereas the people once again left out in the cold. It wasn't somebody that they knew. That's why I felt that the audience reacted so positively, the major audience, much of the intelligentsia or many of the cultural nationalists did not like that move. Well, that is a valid point of view. It doesn't happen to be my own.
How come you cast yourself in the starring role?
Well, a number of reasons. First, I needed someone with a large understanding of cinema, who had a number of years of experience in it, and the people that had that number of years of experience in the cinema generally were not of the street ilk that I needed, one. Two, those that were wanted him to have more lines. He said 6 lines in the whole movie. And they had been taught that lines equal a size of film, a size of a part. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm, sure do.
And I didn't want him to talk a lot. He didn't have to talk a lot. And that's why I did it.
There were a couple of weeks when Sweetback outdid Love Story at the box office, which is pretty extraordinary considering it was an independently produced film. How did you independently get that kind of distribution?
Well, I didn't independently get that kind of distribution. What I simply did was make a good movie. Only 2 theaters in the United States would show it. 2 theaters at all would show the movie. And they did so well, then everybody called me. And at that stage of the game, hey, it was their turn in the barrel. I made deals, and the audience went to see it. That's how that happened.
Milvin Van Peebles is my guest. This is a scene from Sweetback. It's from the beginning of the film when 2 white cops are investigating black clubs and homes looking for a murder suspect.
We don't know nothing about no dead man.
We know that, but the commissioner doesn't.
We just want to borrow one of your boys for a couple hours and take him downtown to make us look good, official-wise.
Why me? I'm sure one man already. George is sick.
You're our friend. We knew you'd be willing to lend a hand.
When did you people start getting so interested in black folks? Dead or alive?
Progress.
You were one of the first, or perhaps the first, black director of a feature film, feature-length film.
Well, I was probably the first of a commercial feature film outside of... after Oscar Michaud went out of business in around 1932 with the really with the advent of sound, he had to phase out.
Were his movies feature length?
Yes, he did a number of feature length movies.
Okay,
I came back to the States in 1967 as one of the French delegates to the San Francisco Film Festival. No one knew I was an American, let alone black, and. I had lived in Europe for many years, and I was a French journalist and then writer, and there was a law that a French writer can have a director's card to direct his own work. So one of my novels I turned into a film script, and that's how I got a French director's card, and that's how the film was made in France.
So you started your film career in France.
No, I didn't start my film
career.
I didn't start making movies in France. I made movies in San Francisco when I used to drive a cable car many years ago.
Oh, I see. So you'd made like small, short, independent films.
I made short, independent films, and I went to Hollywood with my films, and I said, here are my films, here's some of my work, I've written the story, etc., and I'd like a job. And they offered me a job as an elevator operator. I said, no, you don't understand. I'd like to write. I'd like to direct. Then they offered me a job as a tap dancer or a dancer. You know, I said, hey, guys, that's not what I had in mind. And then they explained to me that one day my people might learn to operate this complicated equipment, et cetera, et cetera. And the rainfall at Kilimanjaro was this, that, and the other, you know. And I was at that juncture. I left America.
And you went to France.
No, I went to Holland to get my PhD in astronomy. I used to be an astronomer. And however, those early first films I made were seen in France. Henri Langlois, who started really the first cinema museum, the Cinémathèque Française, declared me a genius and looked me up. And I was living in Holland at the time and said I should be making films. Well, once he called me a genius, I said, finally, there's somebody who understands me.
So you don't think it would have been possible to start your career as a director had you just stayed in America?
What do I know? I mean, it didn't seem that it was burgeoning with opportunity at the time.
Uh-huh. You only made one movie through a studio, and that was Watermelon Man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did that go from your perspective?
Well, it was the most difficult movie I probably had to make because half the time was spent in the corridors of power placating the nervous executives. It was actually the first feature film made by a black in Hollywood itself, and that was one of the stipulations that I had, that we make it in Hollywood. So, and that we use a crew of disenfranchised, which meant women, which meant Orientals or Mexicans, blacks, et cetera, et cetera. None of these people really were around at the time. Each union had one person they would trot out, but outside of that, there really, really wasn't a fair share, which there still isn't today, even though it is seemingly a little better. A fair share of representation of the disenfranchised. And so I got them on as apprentices. And most of those people have gone on to rather good positions in the film community.
You ended up leaving movies to work on Wall Street. Are you still working on Wall Street now?
No, I don't work on Wall Street because it's time intensive. And that is, you have to spend, you don't get a chance to go to the bathroom from when the bell goes off until it goes back off in the evening, when it goes off at 9 in the morning or 8:30 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. And I just found that too exhausting to do that and continue with my other work at the same time.
You were probably, when you started on Wall Street, one of the few black traders with a seat on the exchange.
I was the only black trader on the American Stock Exchange at the time I started there. There were, I think, five brokers. Now, broker is different than a trader. A broker works on the commission and he executes orders for others. A trader executes from his own, for his account or his own company's account, and he does not work on a commission.
So what was it like being the only black trader on the exchange?
Well, I've been in a number of other situations. I was the first black Eagle Scout in the Bohagan Trails. I was the first first black navigator in my squadron. I was the first black and out of ROTC in my college, on and on and on and on, on again. It was not particularly disconcerting to me.
Do you feel that the film industry is any more receptive to black actors, black producers, than the film industry was when you got started?
I think they've become aware of the financial potential and therefore are more willing to use. I mean, if that means as of a change of heart, I don't think there's probably a change of heart. I just think that if you can show that something can make money, the reason there was this rash of blaxploitation movies after Sweetback was because it made a lot of money. The man has an Achilles pocketbook. If you can show him that he can make money, he'll go with it. He'll find the moral or the correct reason later to justify it.
In your new book, No Identity Crisis, your son Mario, with tongue-in-cheek, calls you his lizard dad.
Right.
It talks about you as being the person who really lacks diplomacy when it comes to dealing with somebody.
I gave it the office. My diplomacy was worn away a few years ago. Well, a long time ago.
Did you ever have any?
I can't remember back that far. That's very unfair. How do I know? As I look back, I don't think that was one of my strong points. That was one of my strong points, diplomacy.
Filmmaker Melvin Van Peebles. Melvin and his son Mario co-authored a new book about the making of their new film, Identity Crisis. The book is called No Identity Crisis. It's published by Simon & Schuster.